U.S. strikes on alleged drug boats in the Caribbean.
Strikes inside Venezuela.
The White House claims the group is directly tied to the Maduro regime and is responsible for drug trafficking into the U.S.
Killing the citizens of another nation who are civilians without any due process is called a war crime. And then J.D. Vance responded, quote, I don't give a shit what you call it.
What is this? Is this an effort to try to topple the Maduro government there?
This is war with Venezuela.
We are at war with Venezuela. We wrote that sentence back in early December, and we added this sentence in early January, because now Maduro has been kidnapped and war is as official as it ever gets with the U.S.
The breaking news this morning.
Nicolas Maduro and his wife have been captured in Venezuela.
And it was an assault like people have not seen since World War II.
When we started on this video, boats had been bombed, B-52s were circling the Venezuelan coast, and the CIA had just gotten the go-ahead to do CIA things. War was happening. No congressional declaration needed. Everything in the background. Now, things are a bit more explicit. When we first started on this video, Venezuela wasn't in the news as much, and poll after poll showed that the vast majority of Americans didn't want a war and didn't even see the point of trying to depose Maduro. As far as manufactured consent goes, man, those manufacturing jobs, they really are gone. The justification from the Trump team was that Maduro is a drug runner for a foreign terrorist cartel. But even CNN had a hard time getting that out. At time of last-second editing, that narrative isn't just a matter of popular opinion, it's now making its way through the American judicial system, and you know more than I do how well that's worked out. This isn't the topic of the video, but just consider how fast the face of this war went from war crimes in the Caribbean to full-scale regime change in just a few short weeks of our production cycle. Is this war a distraction from the Epstein files? Is it geopolitical theater adding heat to a cooling trade war? Is it pure Red Scare, war on drugs, reheated Bush nachos? Probably, yes, some or all of that. Regardless, most Americans don't want this war. But Washington certainly does. Hey everybody, before we get into the video, I just wanted to bring some things to your attention and ask for your support. If you're not interested or you're not able to support the channel, I want to make sure that I respect your time, so feel free to skip ahead to this timestamp. For those of you that have stuck around, thank you, and I will get straight to the point. Second thought is in the red. We just finished running last year's numbers, and it's not great. It's not the end of the world, don't freak out just yet, but it's not really the numbers that you want to see. Part of that is that we moved locations and we had to build this little studio shed because office space is way too expensive around here. But even if we remove that expense from the spreadsheet, we're still bleeding about $2,000 per month. The only thing keeping Second Thought afloat right now is the Deprogram, the podcast that I do with Hakeem and Ugopnik. The other part of the problem, leaving aside the fact that YouTube hates left-wing content, is my own fault. Second Thought is a tiny, independent outlet that punches at an institutional level. Because that's important to how I see our role as the mouth of the socialist funnel. Our editing, our motion design, our scripts, it's all at the level of outlets like Vox or Vice, companies that have dozens of employees and millions of dollars to spend on their projects. We are a team of four on a shoestring budget that's 90% Patreon and the remaining 10% made up of our one sponsor and the peanuts we get from AdSense. Because of these pesky socialist principles, I feel compelled to make sure that every person on the team is paid fairly for their work, and that includes annual raises that outpace inflation. Maintaining the quality that we're known for and paying everyone's salaries and benefits, as well as doing annual raises, is challenging when we're already bleeding money. So, bottom line, if we can't find a way to get Second Thought back above water, we're going to need to reassess over the next year or so. We're working on some cool projects behind the scenes which will hopefully help, but those also cost money, so, you know, it's a gamble. If you're in a position to help keep this channel afloat, I would greatly appreciate the support. Now, I don't ask for your generosity without offering something in return. We've already got the Discord server, which is a really cool place. It's got a book club, it's got educator roles, all that good stuff, and we do early access and ad-free versions of every video on the Patreon. But if there's something else that would make becoming a patron more enticing, please do let me know in the comments and I'll see what I can do. Or heck, if you work at some socialist outlet that somehow has money, may I present an enticing purchase opportunity? half joking there, but I do really want this project to continue, and if I'm not able to foot the bill myself, I'll do my best to find a way. Anyway, thank you for sticking around. I just wanted to keep you all in the loop. And if you do choose to support the channel on Patreon, I can't possibly thank you enough. It is only because of viewers like you that this channel exists in the first place. All right, on with the show.
How about we're buying oil from Venezuela? When I left, Venezuela was ready to collapse. We would have taken it over. We would have gotten all that oil. It would have been right next door. But now we're buying oil from Venezuela, so we're making a dictator very rich. Can you believe this? Nobody can believe it.
These days, the Trump administration is getting brazen about the goal of the Venezuelan coup. But already in 2023, before coming back into office, Trump laid out the plan as plain as it can be. Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves. It's just hours away from Florida, and currently sits on the wrong side of the balance sheet. Washington has signaled for years that should Maduro's government just happen to collapse, who knows how, that doesn't matter, maybe, just maybe, the US could tidy all that up quite nicely and turn back the clock a few decades, opening Venezuelan resources back up to investment by switching the leaders around to someone a little more Langley approved. And the leaders in question have already been handpicked and gotten with the program.
They're going to privatize all our industry. Venezuela has huge resources, oil, gas, minerals, land, technology. This country, Venezuela, is going to be the brightest opportunity for investment of American companies, of good people that are going to make a lot of money.
American billionaires are drooling at the thought of having their very own Venezuelan puppet, especially those at Chevron and at those other U.S. oil companies that have been kicked out and prevented from doing corporate colonialism in Venezuela. They've been waiting for years for one of these coups to work. All this, is not the first time American power has run the destabilization game and tried to get Venezuela under its thumb. Hell, this isn't even the first time something like this has been tried this decade. The failed plot to kidnap Maduro in the Bay of Piglets was 5 years ago. The Juan Guaido saga was only the year before that. For God's sake, it's not just Trump rambling and letting it slip. We have senators on the record talking about doing coups openly in prepared statements.
First, we thought that getting Guaido to declare himself president would be enough to topple the regime. Then we thought putting aid on the border would be enough. Then we tried to sort of construct a kind of coup in April of last year, and it blew up in our face when all the generals that were supposed to break with Maduro decided to stick with him in the end. We undermined Norway's talks last summer, and then this March we released a transition framework that frankly is almost a carbon copy of the very one that was in front of the parties last year.
And we shouldn't be all that surprised. This isn't like a rash Trump thing. It's been a group project for a minute. The U.S. is doing openly today what it's done covertly for a century in the rest of Latin America. We've already couped countries like Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Cuba, the Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Guatemala,
Puerto Rico, Colombia, Venezuela, Honduras, Guyana, and still.
Even though the kidnapping was surprising, nothing about this is really shocking when you think about it. But something is different now.
The day of days for America and her allies. Crowds before the White House await the announcement from the president that the Japs have surrendered unconditionally.
For the last 80 years or so, the U.S. has had an outsized role in global politics. After World War II, the U.S. came out on top. Its industry was unscathed. It cemented its alliances in Europe with the Marshall Plan. It had a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. Its main geopolitical rival, the USSR, had just suffered tens of millions of casualties to the U.S.'s hundreds of thousands. And even though the Cold War kept the U.S. somewhat in check for a few decades more, when the Soviet Union was dissolved in 91, that was the definitive end of any sort of global balance of power. Multipolarity was over, and it was replaced with undisputed American hegemony. This is the world I have lived in for all my life. Growing up, there wasn't a single moment where the U.S. wasn't the leader in every facet of global power. Biggest economy, largest military force and global presence, most diplomatic power at the UN and World Trade Organization, the most cultural exports in music and movies.
Here I come.
There was never a point where it wasn't obvious to everyone that the U.S. ran the show. And while publicly this was the spreading freedom and democracy worldwide era, this is the context in which the US conducted hundreds of military and covert interventions abroad with impressive impunity. That was the power of hegemony. For years, through violence, infiltration, intimidation, sanctions, and if they absolutely had to, diplomacy, the US built a world where no country could or would displace it from its number one spot. But like I said, things are different now. Even in mainstream outlets, even in the Financial Times, hegemony has been declared dead. And okay, I mean, come on. It's not hard to see why. The US is on the decline in every metric. Even though the US is still the biggest spender, every other major power has bumped its defense spending. If no one quite stacks up, more and more countries at least have the ability to resist, borderline ignore, US military pressure. Economically, too, China has overtaken the US as the world's biggest economy for a few years now, and is the top trading partner of hundreds of countries. Even diplomatically, the US is losing. This coup is one example, Gaza certainly didn't help either, but as just one more example, every year the UN votes on whether or not to end the US blockade in Cuba. Every year, for 32 consecutive years, all but two, maybe three countries vote against the US. Last year, the US felt compelled to run a heavy-handed lobbying campaign to try to swing the vote with its key allies, and still, quote, they don't have much to show for it. And not that this is the most important thing, but the US now has a bad reputation in most countries, even among close allies. In a survey of just G7 citizens, that's these countries, the US is ranked 48th out of 60. And Latin America has been trending this way for the last decade. Just economically speaking, despite being physically closer to the US, Latin America's biggest trading partner isn't the US anymore. Since 2017, it's been China. Since getting back into office, Trump has tried to offset this loss of influence with a $40 billion injection into Argentina, after the country's been failing catastrophically thanks to anarcho-capitalist President Javier Milei. But this kind of move is probably not gonna be enough. The US isn't keeping up, whether that's militarily, economically, or diplomatically. But even if it were, all signs are pointing to the world moving away from us. That bad reputation we have? It's gonna be hard to get back after things like the USAID cuts last year.
The Trump administration also announced it plans to eliminate over 90% of the U.S. Agency for International Development's foreign aid contracts. The Trump administration also says it will cut $60 billion in overhaul U.S. assistance around the world.
Now, let's be clear. USAID has never been a strictly humanitarian operation and has always been seen with a healthy dose of skepticism. But a decent chunk of the billions of dollars of foreign aid funding was legitimately beneficial for countries dealing with things like famine and deadly epidemics. USAID gave countries a budget for emergency rations, drugs, testing kits, contraceptives, and other necessary medical equipment that saves lives. With that funding disappearing overnight thanks to DOGE, the number of preventable deaths, especially in Latin America and Africa, has skyrocketed. By at least one estimate, we're in the high hundreds of thousands of deaths already, 500,000 of those being children, and with several million more being projected over the next 5 years. That's an amount of soft power and good reputation that's going to be impossible to get back or offset through other means. But we're here to explain all this, not just lay it out. All this, the tariffs, the war, the aid rug pull, all of this has been described as short-sighted stupidity in just about every mainstream outlet. Everyone is Hanlon's razoring the president and calling it a day. But I don't think Trump is throwing away the US's power. I think the US knows that it's already lost it. While the Trump admin is still sticking to the USA number one narrative, actions are speaking a lot louder than words. And the country sure looks like it's scrambling. Scrambling to redefine its role in a world that's caught up. Running foreign interference, sanctioning entire nations' economies, and giving up on domestic workers to find cheap labor abroad these past decades has allowed for a parallel world to be built in the US's shadow. And as the list of countries slighted by the imperial hegemon kept growing, everyone slowly found a way to work without it. More and more, countries are letting go of the dollar and trading in their own currencies, in different economic blocs, and are forming different military alliances representing larger and larger populations. Everything in trade and diplomacy is much more bilateral, country by country, in a world where the US can no longer command obedience across the board, and no one expects it to. The US strategy had to change, so it shifted, away from global leadership to a new era of strict regional dominance. And that's not just me saying this. Right as we were making this video, the US national strategy dropped and made things clear. The plan today is to control Latin America as much as possible with bribes and threats and color revolutions. Global hegemony is dead. Regional struggle is all that's left. Now, for a chunk of Americans, that all sounds pretty good. Secure your backyard, leave the rest of the world to its own devices, be aggressive in trade, and fight your wars on controlled fronts from the comfort of your fortress. Trump has been saying that this strategy can protect the American economy, and the numbers seem to show it. Except, not really. While AI and tech companies have been given convenient cracks to slip through the whole tariff mess, that way the overall numbers still look okay, everything else has been sacrificed. We're flying blind through an invisible recession now that numbers don't get reported. Jobs are being cut at insane rates. Tariffs are making groceries and essentials unaffordable. Everyone is using buy now, pay later apps, and all the government programs that could help have already been cut. This strategy isn't drawn up with us in mind. Billionaires are happy. They know they can weather the storm and buy up foreign assets on the cheap. But everyone else, from farmers in rural towns to remote workers in big cities, are feeling the pain. Best case scenario, if everything goes according to their plan, this Venezuelan war goes through, Chevron makes a few extra billion next year, we'll have destroyed another sovereign nation, and everything else stays exactly as shitty for me and you. Elite power plays don't guarantee anything but more suffering abroad and a distraction from things at home. So hold on tight, because unless we can make a big change soon, these next few years are only going to get worse.